This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And now it's time for Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
That's right. It is an Mark Grody show. Mark Grody show. I will be with you up until 8:30. That is the time at which the Cubs will be at the Dodgers. I cannot wait for the series. I mean, I've been looking forward to it. It's just everything just looks so good right now for the Cubs at 9-6. The Dodgers right now are 10-4. They are coming off of a 2-4 road trip, though, are the Dodgers. So, relatively speaking, despite an 8-0 start for their season, relatively speaking, they've been struggling a little bit. Matthew Boyd against Yoshi Yamamoto. Of course, we saw Yoshi pitch against the Cubs in that first game. Was it the first or the second game? But we got to see Yoshi, and he was a little wild against the Cubs. Good. I mean, the guy's got a 1.69 ERA, but he walked plenty of Cubs, as I recall, in that first game. So we'll be talking Cubs too on this show with Bruce Levine. Bruce will join us at 7:30, and we'll see where he is. I'm not sure if he's over at Marquee tonight, or did he do it? Did he dare go to the White Sox game tonight? The Red Sox and White Sox are underway. Bottom of the second, no score. The White Sox already on their first losing streak. It's unbelievable. They have lost 8 in a row. Davis Martin out there shutting them down so far. The lefty, Sean Newcomb, is on it for the White Sox with his... This is not an ERA festival, and I know this is not the time of the year to take ERAs that seriously, but Martin at 573 and Newcomb at 519. The White Sox, see, the fact that they've scored 0 runs is spot on. The White Sox have 3 runs in their last 3 games, so they're going to get one run. You just don't know when it's going to happen, and when it happens, I promise you I will break in, and we will discuss it. Yes, sir.
I just gotta say, the Mike Tauchman play the other night was one of the most heartbreaking plays I've seen in years.
Oh my god.
I'm like, is this real? Is this actually happening right now?
Is this real, Alex? That is so well put. And actually, I didn't know what happened because I'm watching it, and I thought that Tauchman gave up on the play, you know, where players do that. I'm like, that is not something Mike Tauchman would do. And you see him hurt, and to me, it's like, Alex, it's like slow motion. It's like, no, as he's coming around, and then he just pulls up lame, and they lose the game.
On that play.
Oh, it was just so sad. You're right. I'm glad you brought that up. Poor Mike, because you know, he's the Palatine Pounder. We all love Mike Tauchman. He's a frequent on the scores, particularly on the afternoon show, and he seems like a great dude. So I wish the best for Mike Tauchman. Tickets are on sale now for potential Bulls home postseason games in the play-in tournament and round one of the NBA playoffs. Go to bulls.com/postseason for all things Bulls postseason, including info on tickets, watch parties, and more. Dates and times of games will be confirmed by the NBA. Yeah. As far as the Bulls are concerned, they will be playing Washington tonight. They are just getting underway. They are being, if you'd like to hear them, just come back. Just make sure you come back. You want to check in on them. They're on WBBM tonight. So I actually don't think they have started yet. But, you know, it's like 7 o'clock start at the United Center. It's a 7:10 start at the United Center. So Washington against the Bulls tonight. Bulls 37-43. Washington 17-62. That is a win for the Bulls, I would think. And if it's not, that's a real problem. But I'll keep you updated right here. Just stay right here. We're just hanging out, man. Friday night party. I think Alex said during the break, it's a score after dark. So that's what's going on here. That's the vibe that I would like to have.
Just
here.
Don't refer to it as the acronym of score after dark. It's not sad, okay? It's score after dark.
Yeah.
That would be funny if somebody decided that that would be good. Yeah, we're called sad, but it's not sad. It means that we're just partying here. So that's what's going on. I co-host a podcast with Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune called Take the North, the Take the North podcast. And we record it 3 or 4 times a week. You could find it wherever you get your podcast, download it, and we appreciate you doing that. Today, we recorded an episode which has not dropped yet. This episode is fresh. It is freshly sealed right now. But I was told that I can take it out of its proverbial Ziploc and play some of it for you. The reason I wanted to, it was just a really good conversation with Dan and me and our guest that we had on, Tyler Dunn of Go Long. So what we're going to do is we're going to play about 15 minutes of this, and then we'll react to it, but the rest of it, just because it's the law, the rest of it will drop tomorrow on Take the North. So if you want to hear the full episode, and I think you will after you hear the first 15 minutes of this, that is the place to go, the Take the North podcast. Without further ado, here it is with Tyler Dunn of Go Long. Tyler, great to see you. Thanks for coming on with us, man.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. You know, I go way back with Dan, way back to some late nights at Kilroy's, but it's great to meet you, Mark. It's a pleasure. Any friend of Dan is a friend of mine.
We'll see by the end of this podcast. No, it's great to have you on. I'm very familiar with your work. A lot of great stuff. First of all, wait a minute. Did you guys had some nights at Kilroy's?
Well, Grody, just for full disclosure, we are former colleagues at the Fayetteville Observer in North Carolina for a very short span back in the late 2000s. That's where we met. I was part of the sports staff at the Fayetteville Observer that took one look at Tyler's work and said, yeah, we got to hire this guy. And we brought him in, and he was so good that he left within, how long were you there, like 6 months, 7 months?
It was like 5-6 months. It was
it wasn't long.
It was a hot minute. Didn't really like living in Fayetteville, but I loved the newspaper. We had a great boss. Todd Adams was exceptional, and working with you was great. Just, you know, you were in Raleigh, so you were in a little bit of a nicer city than me. But every so often we'd connect in Fayetteville or Raleigh, and we kind of have kept in touch. You know what really helped, though, is I'm covering the Packers at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You're covering the Vikings at the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and our worlds were just constantly colliding and, you know, combines galore, a Super Bowl mixed in there in Indianapolis. So, yeah, I consider Dan one of my best friends in the biz.
Yeah, and some of those stories will wait for another day in another podcast.
I thought you were going to bring up a Phil Jackson Kobe metaphor from one certain combine. I'm glad that one can be waited for.
That's for my leadership podcast.
I mean, guys, it is a podcast, guys. I mean, this would be the place to reveal.
I don't give a shit. Yeah, let it rip. Whatever.
One of the reasons we did want to bring you forth and conquer here is because you've been spending some time on our turf, really, looking in on the Chicago Bears, particularly with Caleb Williams. Recently did a long sit down with Caleb's personal quarterbacks coach, Will Hewlett. Also, as recently as this week, you've got a piece on Jonah Jackson up at golongtd.com that I would encourage our audience to check out. But let's start here, because obviously the Bears are again an offseason center stage story. This is a common theme here for Grody and I. In Chicago, and you're getting an outsider's look at another whatever it is, contagion of hope and hype and everything else that's there. Just on a big picture level, what is your reaction to Chicago Bears 2025 offseason direction?
How could you not be excited? I mean, it does start with some genuine enthusiasm, right? I remember we talked about it a little bit down there at West Palm. I think I did a radio spot right there at 670 at one point when they're going through the coaching search, and like throughout that line, you know, bad ownership usually creates bad teams, like one way or another. And I'd be stunned if they get Ben Johnson. Like, why would Ben Johnson want to waltz into this situation with all these cooks in the kitchen and just a track record of hope crumbling into a trillion pieces, and everybody left wondering what in the hell happened? Wasn't this a team on the cusp? And he is the number one coaching candidate in back-to-back seasons. It is real what he did in Detroit. Loved spending a lot of time around those lines, even beyond the X's and O's. I mean, he saw culturally up close how you take absolute slop and mold it into an NFC power. I mean, it's a different world there in Detroit. So, you know, he warranted every bit of buzz that he's received the last 2 years and warrants every penny that he got with this contract. I guess that's our answer, right? They just threw a lot of money at him. But
sure,
they got him. They got him somehow. So,
listen, they threw a lot of money, and they threw the big stage of Chicago, which every time this job comes open, and believe me, it's come off open a lot more often than we'd want it to. There's a magnet here that appeals to coaches who see what Ben referred to as a sleeping giant here in Chicago, and who see the opportunity to be the person that awakens that sleeping giant and the spoils that will come with that. And I think that was obviously part of his attraction to get here. But from a Bears global perspective, you're talking about trying to make things right for their young quarterback. And in the last 7, 8, 9 weeks, you've gotten the best offensive play caller on the market. And then you've gone out and refurbished your interior offensive line with two trades and a signing. As much as Grody and I try to be the guys that put our foot on the brake and say, hey, slow down here. We don't need to let this get out of control here. Right. You can't not be impressed with the calculated direction that they've had this offseason.
That's exactly where I'm at, too. I mean, from covering Green Bay and being around these Bears a little bit these last few years, I'm the same way. Like, I'm trying to, like, tap the brakes at every turn because you just, this thing goes sideways. Like, there's the blocked field goal. There's a Thanksgiving Day clock disaster. There's the Hail Mary. I mean, the string of losses that they had in the middle of last season just boggle the brain. But how could you not be excited about all of these pieces kind of fitting together? They figured out their number one cause for concern within, what, 48 hours? And I remember, you know, we were probably both looking at, like, who are they going to say? Trey Smith is getting locked up by the Chiefs. Who's even available at guard? And they aggressively get Jonah Jackson. They aggressively get Joe Tooney. They sign Drew Dahlman, who is perfect for what Ben Johnson wants to do. Jonah Jackson broke it down. Like, in this offense, you need interior linemen who can get from point A to point B in a hurry. And he just flies off the ball as a center. Atlanta, they move their line a lot. It's an exotic rush running game there. So it seems like they handled all of that lickety-split right out of the chute. And it does come down to Caleb Williams. And that's kind of where, maybe like you, Dan and Mark, I him and Hall, like, you want to get excited. I mean, Caleb Williams, a mobile athletic quarterback, a playmaker, dropped into this offense with Ben Johnson. You can see Ben Johnson's enthusiasm himself. I mean, he didn't even mean to take that shot at Jared Goff. I take him at his word there in West Palm, Dan, when he's like, look, I think he said he apologized to Jared Goff after the fact. I'm just so excited about Caleb Williams that his mind's got to be moving a mile a minute. I think it's genuine. I mean, in theory, on paper, this thing could reach new heights that the Bears have never seen at the position and never seen on the offensive side of the ball.
Wow. I mean, when you say that. And hey, man, we're all, Dan and I are the same. Tyler, we have the same amount of jadedness, too, where we're like, oh, man, like, again, here we are getting excited about something. Like, but there is more legitimacy, obviously. When you build your offensive and defensive lines in the offseason lickety split like that, things are going to be good. To the Caleb part, and this is something that came up with your interview with Will Hewlett. What I came away from that is that, particularly to Caleb, is that Caleb seems conflicted in exactly what he wants to be. Does he want to be a pocket quarterback? Do they just want to put this guy in positions, roll him out, use his legs more? He seems like a conflicted quarterback. Do you think Ben Johnson can change that? And what type of quarterback is Caleb Williams?
That is, I think everything kind of boils down to that question, Mark, because I don't know. I think you're right. I think Caleb Williams really struggled with that last year, and he overcompensated. I mean, Will Hewlett, he's known him since he was, you know, in middle school, high school. He said that he could see a quarterback that he's known forever, resistant to run, hesitant to take off and use his physical gifts, and almost overcompensating to be that pocket passer when, you know, eventually he just hit the gas and took off and left defenders in the dust. And it's like, that's got to be a part of his game. I get it, but the Bears just lived that too. You can't do too much of that either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Justin Fields got everybody all excited a few years ago. We're thinking this guy is the future. He's the future for the position. Dan, what was that 2-3 week period like when Justin Fields is running for like 150 yards a week? It was electric.
Yeah, no, there's no question.
That, though, real quick, the funny part about that whole season for Justin Fields, it didn't matter. He did unbelievable thing, extraordinary, fantastic burst, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter. Yeah. It wasn't good enough.
There is a tweet from after the Bears' home loss to the Lions at Soldier Field. This is a game where Justin Fields threw a awful pick six, immediately made up for it with an electric 60-yard touchdown run, and then ultimately couldn't clear the hurdle at the end of the game, which was leading the Bears to a game-deciding drive. And it just kept happening. And I remember there was so much excitement because the rushing records were being broken. And I think it was after the Lions game. It may have been after the Dolphins game, which was a similar script where it was all these highlight reel plays. But the result wasn't there, and the quarterback had the ball in his hands at the end to make the result there and couldn't get it done. And I said, well, wait a minute. It's really good to get excited, but the real answer in this league is to have a guy that can lead game-winning fourth-quarter drives by being a reliable passer when the game's on the line. We saw it very early, as much as the hype was building, that Justin had flaws there. Caleb already in his rookie season has shown you, okay, fourth-quarter ball in my hands. I'm capable of going down, and none more memorable than the most recent in Green Bay and the season finale to finally break the Bears' 10-game losing streak to get them over the hump and do that. And so that is something that's part of his game. It brings me back to the conversation you were just having with Mark about this concept that Ryan Poles has talked about with the quarterback position. You can have surgeons or you can have artists. And there are some guys that have to try to find a blend of being both. And I think that is an ongoing process here that no one is really sure what that pie chart should exactly look like with Caleb. And there is seemingly a push from Ben Johnson at the forefront of this of being like, let's start with the surgery. Like we've seen you with the smock on, we've seen you with the palate out. Let's get the scrubs on and let's go into surgery training for a little bit.
And we hear that Caleb Williams does have that in his game. You know, I think it was Dennis Simmons at USC. You know, he worked with him as an assistant coach day in and day out. And he insisted that he can win from the pocket. He can go through his progressions. He can beat you death by a million paper cuts. All the stuff that you're talking about, Dan, that you have to do late in the game to win. What does Colin Cowherd always call Justin Fields? A YouTube quarterback. I mean, there's something to that. I agree. Like, you don't, we get caught up into the YouTube quarterbacks this time of year with all these prospects coming in. You got to win. Just taking exactly what that defense is going to give you, play to play to play to play. And you know that Ben Johnson is going to put him in those situations. Mm-hmm. And it's on Caleb Williams to see it, anticipate it, and throw it. Because he's going to have those three Mississippis, I believe, with this refurbished line and this play caller. Like the players are going to be open. The receivers are going to be open. Can he have the confidence and the mental aptitude to know where to go with the football and just trust it? And we keep hearing that he does have that in his game. And you mentioned some examples, but still, he was sacked 68 times. Even the last year at USC, man, it was fun to watch, but he's just kind of backyard footballing it a lot of the time. Now, is that the analogy I used with Bill Hewlett? He kind of agreed. Is that Allen Iverson in 2001 with Tyrone Hill and Eric Snow and Matt Geiger and Todd McCullough needing to create out of necessity? Like, he has to jack up 30, 40 shots a game because the line isn't that good. He's got all these issues. Or is there a fatal flaw in there in Caleb Williams? I'm leaving myself open to that. Like, as much as I want to anoint him and the Bears, the Super Bowl contenders, we've seen it too often where we get really excited about a young quarterback, yet there is that fatal flaw that eventually shows itself. And it showed itself with Justin Fields, just like it showed itself for so many young quarterbacks.
Mitch Trubisky would be another one of those. That was Tyler Dunn on Take the North with me and Dan Weider. The rest of that podcast drops tomorrow, but I just wanted to give you a little taste of it. I did ask Tyler, too, about Caleb Williams versus Jaden Daniels. That is part of what you're going to hear if you would like to listen to the entire Take the North podcast when it drops tomorrow. Yeah, I mean, we all have to be realistic. I understand if some fans aren't realistic, that's okay, especially if you're a younger fan, because you look at the Bears as kind of like superheroes, and Caleb Williams in particular. But we do have to keep an eye on the fatal flaw, if there is a fatal flaw. Like, it could Caleb Williams not be what we all think he is? Of course, that has to be part of it. I still think Caleb Williams is going to be great. I really do. I think that not just because of Ben Johnson, I just haven't moved from it. And trust me, there were plenty of issues with Caleb Williams last year. There were plenty of times where, especially in the first few drives, I mean, it was kind of a joke sometimes. And a lot of that was because of Caleb Williams. And I do think, as I was asking Tyler Dunn there, of course he was a conflicted quarterback. I'll never forget when Caleb Williams was doing the whole car wash of interviews, you know, final interviews before the season started, and then we just leave the guy alone. And he came on the score with us. I believe I was filling in for, oh God, I don't know who I was filling in for. you know, there's been a lot of changes. I don't know who I was in for. But it was pretty obvious that from talking to Caleb, we had him on, and I asked him, I said, do you think that you can be a pocket quarterback? Because that was the only thing that, like, maybe there were some questions about it. And there was questions about that with his predecessor as well. And the answer that he gave me is, yeah, I could play pocket quarterback. I can, you know, I could be a running quarterback. I could, you know, he just went through all the litany of different types of quarterbacking. You're basically saying, yo, I can do all of that stuff. So, and I believe he can do all of that stuff. But somewhere along the line, it has to be taught correctly, harnessed, I think, to some degree. And I just think that a lot of times too, with Caleb Williams, the clock in his head was just off when he would try really hard to just be a pocket quarterback, where he would allow the defense to collapse around him and just sort of take sacks at times. You know, he was sacked 68 times, so a lot of those issues were not his. But I mean, I noticed that that was something that really stuck out to me early in the season, that he was just like insisting upon staying in that pocket. And hey, you go to, and to some degree that was okay, because you don't want your prized rookie number one overall quarterback just taking off every time. And none of us, I mean, it sounds crazy, wanted to see, you know, Justin Fields 2.0. And I say it's crazy because he had that one year where he did unbelievable things. But it all, as I said in the podcast, it just always blows me away that it didn't matter. And I feel bad when I say that. I feel bad for Justin Fields. I feel bad for Chicago, because Justin Fields was, like I said, he was well-loved. And he did some electric things. I mean, things that we hadn't seen since Devin Hester, really. And, you know, name your superstar player from the Gale Sayers, you know, just like these unbelievable eye-popping run. And then now he's gone. you know, it didn't matter. And it's really, at the end of the day, it's a shame. Cubs and Dodgers tonight, pregame. We'll get going officially at 8:35 here on The Score. 9:10 is the first pitch to be made by Yoshi Yamamoto. Matthew Boyd throws back, the big lefty. Coming up next here on this version of A Mark Grody Show, we are going to talk to the one and only Bruce Levine about the Cubs, and maybe we'll get into a little bit of the White Sox. We'll check in and see what they're doing. As a matter of fact, I don't know where Bruce is. He might be at the White Sox game right now. He might be at Marquee. He's a man about town. Bruce is like PCA. He's just bouncing all over the place. We'll talk to Bruce next on The Score.
Attention sports enthusiasts. Keep the adrenaline pumping and elevate your game day with Chumba Casino. It's completely free to play. No purchase necessary. Whether you're cheering from the stands, on the move, or relaxing at home, Chumba Casino brings the thrill of social casino directly to your fingertips. Experience the ultimate social casino adventure with reels of casino-style games, offering hundreds of exciting options to choose from and fresh new releases every week. There's always something new and thrilling to explore. From action-packed social slots and classic blackjack to engaging bingo and solitaire, the fun never stops. Plus, enjoy generous daily login bonuses and a fantastic free welcome bonus to kickstart your social gaming journey. Dive into the excitement. Discover a world where you can play for your chance to redeem some serious prizes and have a blast along the way. Don't miss out. What are you waiting for? Join now and immerse yourself in nonstop fun and adventure with Chumba Casino. Get in on the action today at ChumbaCasino.com and make every day a Chumba day. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. TNC supply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
0-2-1, Kyle Tucker. Tucker had an RBI single his first time. He drives one in the air. Deep right field. It's got a chance. Gone! Kyle Tucker with a home run to right. His first at Wrigley Field as a member of the Cubs. And the Cubs now open up a 7-3 lead.
Pat Hughes with the call right here on 670. The score of that Kyle Tucker bomb. Cubs digging in right now, getting ready to take on the Dodgers. I probably shouldn't say that because it's still like 2 hours away. Cubs at the Dodgers tonight. 8:35 pregame, 9:10 is the first pitch. Matthew Boyd against Yoshi Yamamoto. Bruce Levine is the Scores baseball insider. He also works with the Marquee Sports Network. He is the host of Inside the Clubhouse, and right now he is getting ready for his pregame show over on the Marquee Sports Network of the Cubs and Dodgers. Bruce, what's going on, man? Thanks for coming
Mark,
on. Give us a little
you?
Bit of your time. Oh,
how
I'm doing great, man. I'm yeah. doing really well. I appreciate you asking. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm living the baseball dream, covering both Chicago teams now for 652 years, and it's been it's been a wonderful run.
Someday we will go through all 692 years. It is something that I have on my list that I would like to discuss with you, Bruce. But things are good. I've been saying it, man. You know me, Bruce. I probably talk
the glass is not only half empty, but there's no glass at all sometimes. So.
What? Yeah. No, that's true. No, you're right. Yeah. You're right. I could be a little pessimistic sometimes. There's no doubt about it. But I've been saying, even on this football-heavy show, and I know you think I probably talk too much about the Chicago Bears, Bruce, but this series, man, I've been looking forward to this. Like, not necessarily as a test. I guess you could say that. I mean, that's justifiable. I'm just looking forward to seeing two really good teams play, and I think that's what the Cubs are. I know that that's what the Dodgers are. Do you think the Cubs are a really good team?
I mean, so far they look good. You know, they've done everything well. There's some, you know, things that you worry about if you're a Cub fan, and that is, you know, how deep is the bullpen? You know, will it continue to, be up in the air? Will the offense cover some of the starting pitching that hasn't been all that great so far? But offensively, defensively, the Cubs have been as good as anybody. They've averaged over 6 runs a game. Defensively, they haven't hardly given up a thing. They might have had one bad defensive game. Certainly the Turner error the other day cost them a ball game. But the reality is base running, defense, offense, outstanding. Pitching, pretty good enough. Bullpen, still a question mark as to how that's going to shake out.
Yeah, I like the way that Craig Counsell is maximizing all parts of the game. Like you mentioned, the stolen bases. I mean, that's been a thing this year for the Cubs, and I think that's a pretty smart way to go about business right now. But let's talk about the starting pitching and what the latest is. As this is not the latest, people know that Justin Steele is on the IL with elbow tendonitis. Do the Cubs know, or do you know who is starting for the Cubs on Sunday?
We don't. We know that Jordan Wicks at AAA has been scratched from his start there this weekend. So the assumption is that he'll probably be heading out west to join the team and be ready to take part in some form of pitching for the Cubs either Sunday or Monday, I would believe. So with that in mind, we also have heard that Justin Steele is seeking a second opinion on his injured elbow, where it's been called tendonitis, but we don't know why he's seeking that. We don't know what the initial opinion was, but we were told by Zach Zaidman in LA that they are seeking a second opinion for him. So it's not good when the first opinion isn't good enough for you to say, you know, you're good or you're not good. Steele wants to hear what it is from somebody else. So it might not be an alarm. It might just be to verify that he's okay. We're hoping that's what the case is.
Yeah, I wonder, too, if it's because he had the same injury last year, too, right? Right, Bruce? Same thing?
Yeah.
He had
tendonitis. The elbow was sore. He missed time. It was last summer. So,
right.
So maybe it's a second opinion.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe it's a second opinion to, hey, how can we get this to stop happening? You know what I mean? Like, and do I have to do something? I hope it's not something drastic.
Well, if the doctor says start pitching with your right arm, I think you're in trouble. I don't try to be funny about it, but the reality is that Steele's had so many injury problems, and the sad part is when he's out there, he's so good. I mean, the guy has just been outstanding for the last 2.5 years, but. Last year was the hamstring at the beginning of the year. There's the elbow toward the end. And, it's just one thing after another. So you wish him well. I mean, he's a great competitor, a great kid. You hope it turns out all right.
Yeah, no doubt about him. He's an absolute bulldog. And, I think, between him and Shota Imanaga, you got a couple of aces, whoever's got the hot hand. And I know Shota had a bad start in his last one, but I'm really not worried about Shota. There's no reason to be worried, right? But actually, you know what, Bruce? Because you brought this up or brought it to my attention, I think, listening to Inside the Clubhouse, that Shota, he's been kind of like he did last year early in the season, giving up the fly balls. And in the game the other day against Texas, he just didn't get away with giving up those big flies.
Well, the big flies were assisted by an uncommon April south wind blowing directly out to left field. So
it was blowing out that day? Okay, I don't know that.
Yeah,
that it was,
yeah, it was blowing straight out to left field. So the ball certainly had an assist. Again, you're not taking anything away from the hitter, but again, it's an uncommon wind that you see in April when it's been, ice cold there. I mean, it's as cold as it's been there forever, for Monday and Tuesday night. It was just, doing the post-game interview on the field, you felt bad for the players asking them to stay around for an extra 2.5 or 3 minutes to do the interview because they've been freezing everything off for 2.5 or 3 hours. But nonetheless, they've been playing good ball. And, again, I think there's a lot of reasons why, and some of it is the pitching depth that they have tonight. You look at, their starting pitcher tonight, and he's been – hasn't given up a run yet. Boyd hasn't given up a run yet. And then, you have bench players that are actually almost as good as starting players. Guys like Birdie, Workman hasn't gotten in there much. He's a Rule 5 guy that you have to keep on the roster. But, you have Turner, who's had some big hits and good at-bats for them already, albeit the error that he made the other day. So, there's been a lot of commentary about Turner, too, talking about him stepping in the middle of the game, for Bush sometimes, even if Bush was the number four hitter. It was in the fifth inning the other day when Council decided to use Turner to pinch hit, and it worked out. He got a hit into the hole, and it proved out to be the go-ahead run. But nonetheless, it's unconventional when you're looking at a fourth hitter in a lineup that's getting pinch hit for in the fifth inning.
that's not the baseball you and I grew up with. I mean, I don't know what it was like 640 years ago, though. I mean, was the cleanup hitter still something then? Or
was there even nine guys
in a lineup?
They didn't hit the ball that far.
They hit it off a tee, right? Or
small ball was the name of the game. It was like... No torpedo bats, no pine tar, no batting gloves, no crying in baseball.
It's just a bunch of Tadahito Gucci's and Scott Podsednik's out there. Yeah, no, there is a place for all of those guys.
Hey, stay off of our guest tomorrow on Inside the Clubhouse. Leave Scotty Pods alone.
Oh, is he coming on? I was going to ask you, what's going on? So Scotty Pods is on tomorrow. Who else? Yeah, I know you always got stuff cooking up.
Cliffy Floyd from the Marquee Sports Network and MLB Network. He'll be our guest too, David Haw and I from 9 to 11. Thanks for the early plug. But We digress from the conversation here, my friend.
Yeah, well, will you? I love it when you yell at David Haw, and I love listening
I don't yell
to you
at
too.
Him.
Yeah, you yell at him a little bit. So
no,
actually, David's more of a yeller. David's more of a yeller.
We have spirited conversation every Saturday, 9 to 11, 51 weeks out of the year, except for the draft weekend where we're preempted for.
I'm sorry about that.
Mark Grody's sport.
Hey, Bruce, we're having a live Take the North podcast Bears show Thursday in the performance studio if you want to come on out.
I mean, I heard
about that. Yourself away.
That's,
yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah,
you guys a great job with that.
Well, thank you. And I honestly love listening to you and David, and I know you love David, and I think it goes both ways, and it's a good listen because neither of you guys.
There's nothing but love at the score.
Nothing but love. That's right. We're for you. Since we opened the doors, there's nothing but love at the score. We are a perfect operation.
Yes.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
Bruce, Seiya Suzuki has been putting on a clinic, as has Kyle Tucker. We'll talk about him, assuming you don't have to take off yet. But can Suzuki just keep this up? Like that's the question, because we've seen him get hot before, and then it just feels like he goes away. Like even I know the numbers were great last year, but I want to see like this Seiya Suzuki most of this year. Is that possible?
He's just hitting the ball so hard, Mark. I mean, it's just... You know, they're just line drives. Balls are going to go out. He's going to hit his 22 to 25 home runs. He's going to drive in 90 if he stays healthy. He's probably going to have an OPS in the 850s to 900. He's just, dramatically improved year to year. He had injuries both his first 2 years. But if he can stay injury-free, he's a very impactful hitter. And, you know, along with Tucker, it changes the whole dynamic of the offense for the Cubs.
Yeah, it does. And you're right. Suzuki, his outs are loud. You could especially listening on the radio with the great engineering that is done by Mr. Zerang. The sound, the crack of the bat with Seiya Suzuki has been something. Same deal for Kyle Tucker. What's the latest? Because I know, Bruce, we're required to ask you about this every single time. Are they going to talk in season, Kyle Tucker and the Cubs, or not? Should we put it away for now? What's the deal with Kyle Tucker? Because
do you have an extra $450 million with you?
Not personally, but I bet Tom Ricketts does.
Okay, so would you like to call Tom and ask him?
I don't know if he takes my calls anymore. He's a delightful man. Okay. Maybe he would. I would. I mean, maybe I
think
I will.
You know the projections out there by the experts who are experts. I don't know how you get there, but they're experts in projecting how much money people should get are saying 10 years and $450 million for Tucker. And who am I to argue with that? After Guerrero got his $500 million this last week for 14 years, the AAV, which is the average of each year, would be much higher for Tucker, although less years, because Guerrero is actually 2 years, 2.5 years younger than Tucker is, and that's how those things go.
Yeah. All right, Brewster.
I mean, you don't have the money. Is that what you're saying?
I personally don't have the
money. If you were the owner of the Cubs... Mark Grody was the owner of the Cubs, and that's a scary thought. Okay.
Yeah, it really is.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of casino-style games like bingo, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah. Are we back? We are back. I am Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Somebody tried to sabotage our Friday night party.
Oh, nothing like surge to derail our plans,
wow.
Mark. Nothing
wow.
like a power surge.
I mean, we had just a good old-fashioned power surge at the Score. Everybody got zapped. I am, full disclosure, I am broadcasting from home today. And so my internet went out. Obviously, Bruce got bounced somewhere along the line. Alex got bounced. I don't know where I was. So I am sorry about Bruce Levine. And here are some of the things that I was saying that Bruce Levine probably didn't hear or anybody really heard at this point. First of all, listen to Inside the Clubhouse tomorrow. Bruce and David Haugh, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. You heard him right there. He's going to have amongst his guests, Scotty Podsednik will be on. But at the end of the conversation, Bruce was asking me about, you know, would I pay $450 million for a player like Kyle Tucker? And my answer is yes, because it's time. It's time. I think, you know, the Cubs have not been in the playoffs since 2020. That's 4 years ago. When the Cubs did what they did in the Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer years, starting in 2015, the organization changed. Quite frankly, it went from being a lovable loser to being a winner, and we ditched all the other crap. This was an organization that was comporting itself differently. They went out and got Theo Epstein, who drafted some of the best players that the Cubs have ever had. And that obviously worked out in the form of three straight visits to the National League Championship Series, being allowed to sign other guys like John Lester and Jason Hayward. And I know Hayward didn't work out for the most part, or didn't work out the way we had planned for him to work out. But they were doing it. They were all in. They were going for it. So it's time again. If Ricketts was like, you know, I'm tired of things not working out, spending the money, all of that kind of stuff. Well, guess what? I think the reprieve is over, and that's exactly why I would do it with Kyle Tucker. It's just inexcusable. Not like I don't expect the Cubs to be the Dodgers. It's fun to say, it's fun to get mad and say, yes, the Cubs should be like the Dodgers. That's an outlier, folks. I mean, it really is. Like what they have done and put together is what the Yankees once were. And the Yankees still are to some degree. But there used to be a time where everybody went to the Yankees. Now everybody, all stars, everybody wants to go to the Dodgers, which is, I wonder if that's where Kyle Tucker wants to go. So I think that it's a little bit silly to think, yeah, we're going to be like that. But it doesn't mean you don't go out and get one or two superstars in your lineup, and certainly not poo-pooing it, and certainly not saying, well, the price is too high. You're not going after three or four $500 million guys like they do with the Dodgers. You're going after one of these dudes. And it's not an inexpensive payroll. I get it. It's not like they haven't spent money. But I think we all know what we're talking about here. We're talking about elite players and allowing your team to sign these guys and have their not, because look, this is a good Cubs team. It is. But it's not the type of Cubs team that you look at and say, yeah, I think they can compete for a World Series. Or even if you think that's silly to make that the bar, even win playoff games, because that's kind of where I think I am. I want to see the Cubs get back in the playoffs, win playoff games, win playoff series, get back to the National League Championship Series. And it's just been a big old struggle for the Cubs to do that. And make it clear to me at the beginning of the season that you can win playoff games. Make it easy for me to say, yeah, I think they will win 90 games. Because, look, if they had gotten Bregman, I probably would have gotten them closer. Because right now, I at the beginning of the season, I said, and that's what will be stuck with it, is on the record, counselor, I said that the Cubs, I can't give them 90 wins. I can give them 86 or 87 because I think the Cubs are good. There's just some things on the team even before the season that you looked at and said, is it sustainable? Can the Cubs win in the playoffs? And part of it, quite frankly, was the starting staff, which is good, but they just don't have that one
killer, unless Shota Imanaga actually is that the way he started. I know he had a bad start in his last one, but that is part of the issue. But they are pretty deep in terms of it. It will be very interesting to see who the Cubs have pitching on Sunday, as Bruce Levine was just telling us that they don't know yet what direction that they're going to go on Sunday. So that will certainly be interesting. All right, I want to make sure I got that out after the big power surge, just to do the Cubs some justice. Also coming up at 8 o'clock, we're going to try to do a couple of things. We're going to jam in a couple of things. I teased you guys with the Carter Hawkins. Let's hear from Carter Hawkins and what he is saying about Kyle Tucker and a few other things on the Cubs that we will hear from the general manager. Also, we're going to talk more Bears in the 8 o'clock hour as well. I'm Mark Grody. This is The Score. Hey, what's going on? I'm Mark Grody here with you for about another 30 minutes or so when we turn it over to Zach Zaidman, who will perform the pregame show again just a little bit after 8:30. 8:35 is when the pregame will start. 9:10 is the first pitch. Cubs and Dodgers. That's what's going down. I'm checking. Oh, my goodness. Whoa, look at this. The White Sox lead the Red Sox 6-0 in the middle of the fifth inning. The White Sox of the 8-game losing streak. Now I want to see what's going on in this game here. Jacob Amaya with an RBI double, two-run double to make it 2-0 early. Miguel Vargas with a two-run double. It's a doubles night for the White Sox. Luis Robert Jr., just a single. Single to center, scoring Miguel Vargas to make it 5-0. And then Lenin Sosa, single to right center, scoring Luis Robert. White Sox leading Boston 6-0. I did not expect to see that when I just checked it out on my phone. Let me check out the Bulls here for you, too, because the Bulls are on WBBM. The Bulls are thumping Washington right now, 58-43. Of course, I mean, the Bulls got to win it, and they are looking really good against a really horrid Washington team. But just given the Vucevic, 11 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. It's a Vuce game. Kobe White has 10 right now. Modest Bozelas, 3. Kevin Herter, 5. So I just wanted to get you guys up to date on some of the things that are going down around. We've been talking about the Cubs, and we'll give you their lineup here a little bit later on. I'm also going to get into some more Bears with Brett Coleman, co-host of the Bootleg Podcast, here in a second. But the general manager of the Cubs, Carter Hawkins, was on the radio station earlier this week. We've been talking about Kyle Tucker. I've been giving my opinions. Bruce was giving his. Why don't we hear from Carter Hawkins on Kyle Tucker and his future potentially with the Cubs?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll repeat a lot of the stuff Jed said. You know, we'll keep those conversations internal, whether they're happening or whether they're not happening. But I'll also repeat what Jed said, and that, you know, he's a player you want to build around, and he's absolutely an elite hitter in this league and played a great defense as well. And he's carried our lineup, you know, along with our catchers over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, we'll expect to see that continue through the season, and, you know, just thrilled that we have him on this club.
Crazy lot of money floating around. And we just saw another contract extension in Toronto and another big deal. And, you know, you keep wondering, like, how big are these contracts getting? Do you have to move quicker because the more you wait, the bigger the like, how do you judge that? How do you balance the kind of price of playing poker going up so exorbitantly?
Yeah, I mean, generally, you know, you're trying to judge markets. You're trying to understand, you know, are there certain positions, certain players that are overvalued or undervalued, and, you know, allocate your dollars appropriately, you know, within those contexts. But, you know, it's hard to judge markets. You know, the guys that are doing it on Wall Street, you know, are having a really hard time right now, and not too much easier over here in baseball either. So, yeah, I mean, those are conversations that we're constantly having, you know, during the off season, during the season, you know, trying to understand where there might be some inefficiencies. And, you know, we're just trying to make sure that, you know, when we're spending money, that money is going towards wins, and that money is going towards wins in an efficient fashion. And there's a lot underneath that sentence, but that's really the goal.
That is Cubs general manager Carter Hawkins on The Score earlier this week. He said it. He's an elite hitter. He's not a good hitter. He's not a great hitter. He's an elite hitter. So yes, 100% you give him the money. It's time. He's a good defender. He's a good guy, seemingly. young enough at 29. It is time to do this for your own franchise, to act accordingly, to be in lockstep with your fan base. And I get it. Fan base doesn't always know better. We don't always know better. That's for sure. But I do know the Cubs haven't been in the playoffs for the last 4 years and that it is time. By the way, I don't know if say this is the way my brain has been working when I've been watching the Cubs game, in particular the Texas series, which for the most part was very good, except for the last game. There was a moment where I don't remember who hit the ball for Texas, but there was a ball that Kyle Tucker in right field, he had trouble dealing with it because of the way right field is situated at Wrigley Field. It's not easy to play the corners at Wrigley Field. We know that. That's my point. He struggled with it. An extra run scored, I think. And I was like, oh, man, is this where Kyle Tucker is going to be like, oh, no way. I am not going to deal with that wall for the next 10 years of my life. I don't think so. Not to mention that on the same day, it was like 25 degrees. So I'm like, oh, man, he hates us, doesn't he? He hates Wrigley Field. He hates our weather. So I want him to be happy. And I think he needs to be made happy. And I hope that I know the fans will do their part out there. But yeah, I do get a little bit concerned. The other big concern with the Cubs right now, it's the biggest concern, is the starting pitching, because Justin Steele, obviously, you know, might be their best starting pitcher. He's on the 15-day IL. As Bruce told us, man, didn't like hearing this, he's getting a second opinion on the shoulder tendonitis, which to me is probably because he had the same injury last year, and he's probably wanting to go to another doctor and say, what the hell's going on? Why have I been getting this the last couple of years? And I hate to say this, does something drastic need to be done in terms of getting Justin Steele healthy and right? That, and it's early in the year, and the Cubs have made it clear that they are being overly, you know, cautious about this, an abundance of caution, all of that kind of stuff right now when you have the luxury to do things when it's so early in the season. But Carter Hawkins was asked about Justin Steele. Here it is.
I think that Justin Steele news kind of took everyone for a little bit of a by surprise. Was this a pre-existing thing, or did he just come out of that start with a sore elbow?
I mean, kind of both. You know, obviously, it's the same injury as last year, something that's been nagging him. So, you know, that happens with players, you know, where there's something that, you know, kind of pops up here and there, you know, throughout their careers. And Justin's no exception there. And, you know, this one popped up. It's not something that had been hurting him in spring training. You know, he'd been in a really good place. And, you know, we're hopeful that we caught it early and that we'll be able to get him back here soon. And, you know, that's why we're taking a conservative route here.
Carter Hawkins, unfortunately, his cadence is always so everything's going to be okay that you can't really tell what the concern level may be. But, of course, there is a high concern level over Justin Steele right now going forward. I'm going to play you one more from Carter Hawkins, and then we're going to get into some more Bears. I've also got a Cubs starting lineup that I will give you. But this one, our last cut here is – what was the last one? I forgot, Alex. What was the third one? I know it was something really good. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. That's right. Poor Matt Shaw, the rookie. I feel like your batting stance is kind of like a personal thing, right? It's something that baseball players developed. You know, I played baseball through my sophomore year in high school, and, like, batting stances, like, they're very personal. Everybody is on him for the leg kick, and here's Carter Hawkins talking about his approach at the plate for the young rookie shorts, or third baseman.
Oh, no nightmare. Probably enjoy it for sure in terms of just, you know, having something else to think about. You know, the thing about hitters is they all get back to similar positions after their load, right? So
right. The
stance is kind of a comfort position to where they start. I mean, think about Craig Counsell, right? Like where he started. Like his position, if you freeze framed it as the pitch is starting to be released from the pitcher, it's going to look very similar to all other hitters. And so the path to get to that, you know, that convergent position for all hitters is a little bit more difficult if you have a little bit more unorthodox stance, but it's still the same thing. So I think for a hitting coach and for that hitter, it's just, okay, how are you going to get from this place of comfort to this next place of success that looks like what all successful hitters do? And yeah, that's a little bit more difficult, but it's offset by the comfort that he gives the hitter.
That is Carter Hawkins. Good stuff from him. He's going to be a regular on the score this year. Carter Hawkins and Jed Hoyer both love hearing it. You know, so far, so good for the kid. Here it is. I have in my hand, in my phone, a Cubs lineup. Cubs at the Dodgers again. 8:30 is when Zach will roll in. Yeah, he gets there right at 8:30. No, Zach's been at the ballpark probably for 4 hours by now. Ian Happ is leading off for the Cubs and playing left field like he does. Kyle Tucker batting second and playing right field. Seiya Suzuki is the DH, batting third. Batting fourth for the Cubs, Michael Busch. He will be playing first base. Dansby Swanson will be batting fifth and playing shortstop. Nico Horner, the number six hitter and your second baseman. PCA, Pete Crow Armstrong, batting seventh and playing center field. Matt Shaw, about whom we just heard, batting eighth and, of course, is your third baseman. We'll see Miguel Amaya catching and batting ninth. And Matt Boyd is the starting pitcher for the Cubs tonight. And he's been successful so far. Two starts, has yet to allow a run against two good teams, San Diego and Arizona. Now it'll go up a level, so we'll see what the lefty Boyd is all about tonight. I think the game, because he's 1-0, I think the game that he pitched in, the Arizona game, that was the one where, not his fault, but that was the one where the Cubs blew an 8-run lead. Boyd got out while the getting was good, though. He's like, I don't want to be part of this. I'm just going to let the bullpen take the blame for that. And, yes, we know that there are bullpen problems for the Cubs. I just don't really feel like talking about the bullpen much tonight. I mean, it's like a constant headache for me, so I'm going to forego that. But let's get to some more Bears here to finish out the show. I am quickly running out of time because of Cubs baseball, but I am told that we are commercial free, up until I got to get out of here at just a little bit after 8:20. So we're going to just keep this puppy rolling right here. And one of the draft guys that was on the score today was Brett Coleman. He is the co-host of the Bootleg Podcast. He was on the midday show today, and Alex Kuhn, our fine producer, has prepared a bit of Brett Coleman. Let's take a listen to it.
I really don't think Genty's going to be there. I don't think Tyler Warren's going to be there. Obviously, Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, like I think all those guys are going to be gone in the first seven picks. And so they're going to be left with a really, really hard decision because they are firmly in the second tier of players by the time we get to pick 10. All the first tier guys, whether you want to say a 1A tier, a 1B tier, they're all going to be gone. So it's going to come down to, you know, do you like Mason Graham enough to take him at 10? Which for me, I'm a little bit different. I'm a little bit lower on Mason Graham than a lot of people. Just size, length, lack of power as a pass rusher. I think he's a really, really solid run defending defensive tackle as a pass rusher. Like he's pretty streaky. And I think if you just want pure pass rush from an interior rusher, there's guys that you can get elsewhere in this draft that I think would still fill that role. So I'm not even sure Mason Graham is in play at 10. I think we're looking at potentially like a Malachi Starks pick, which I know is a name that not a lot of Bears fans have considered. But A, he's the best safety in this class. He's one of the only blue chip talents that I think will potentially be on the board because he plays safety. And then people also have to remember, there's no safeties on the roster after this season. So if you want to draft for a year ahead and have a guy who, A, probably could start this year anyway, and B, you already have that solution built in for 2026, and you're getting a really, really good player with contract control for 5 years, who, by the way, based on rookie slotting, is only going to be like the 30th highest paid safety anyway. Like, I think Malachi Starks is somebody to pay attention to. I really don't think Genty or Warren are going to be there.
Do you think it makes more sense because of Starks and maybe him not being that high on draft boards to trade down and take a guy like that, or even an offensive tackle? Or do you think they should just draft from where they are? Because it doesn't sound like they're going to have the willingness to give up what it would take to get to that first tier that you were just talking about.
I think ideally, yes, trading down would be great. But I don't know if they're going to be able to go that far, right? Like they might be able to go into the mid-teens if somebody's trying to jump the Niners to get a corner or a defensive tackle because they need both. Like I could see them maybe going to like 15 if the Falcons want to come up to jump the Niners or maybe if the Bengals want to come up to get an edge, depending on how the Trey Hendrickson thing is working out. Like, hell, I honestly wouldn't even hate it if a Trey Hendrickson trade for Chicago was part of a swap down to 17, if they could make the math work on that one. So I would love it if they could trade down. The hard part is finding somebody who wants to come up.
Man, you just said something that would make a lot of people very, very happy. I thought that that was not even something to consider. But the math would be the difficult piece of this because of how much money the Bears' recent moves have already taken off of that cap. Like, that would have to be some... It would have to be some Bengals math, frankly, where you're paying somebody into 2098. I don't know how you work it out.
And it's something that you see happen in the league a little bit more often. Not to go on a tangent, but Bears fans, follow me here. If you're looking at what the Eagles have done as far as how they structure their contracts, a lot of that is only possible because of all the money that they have raised, all the liquid capital, the actual cash that they have raised. And Jeffrey Lurie last year sold an 8% stake of the Eagles for about $660 million. And what that allowed them to do was pay all of these contracts that are essentially just option bonuses spread out for years and years and years with these void years on the end of the deal, so that they can keep cap hits low while paying guys at top of market value. But that's only possible if you have a whole bunch of liquid cash available. The Bears, in theory, could do that too. I just don't know how much liquid they have available.
Well,
or,
they're also
or what
trying
they
to...
could do to raise it.
Well, that the stadium piece of this is huge for the Bears. So our understanding is it's a perhaps a McCaskey family 70% or so. But, you know, I don't know that they've taken advantage of that private equity 10% that the NFL is just now allowed. But the reason we have the numbers on this, or at least some of the numbers, is because they want to build that stadium in Arlington Heights. That's a property that has been sitting vacant since they purchased it. They have not broken ground on anything. There's still talk that the stadium might be built somewhere else, although that has dwindled. And we don't know if they're going to need that, say that liquid you just discussed, for the stadium project.
And not to mention, like, it's really, not to go in a completely different direction, but with the way the world economy is looking right now, and nobody knows exactly how expensive it's going to be to import construction materials that we need to build a stadium, there could be so many cost overruns on that thing, even if they decided to build it in Arlington or whatever they decide to do, like in Chicago proper. Like, construction costs are going to potentially be skyrocketing here, which then leaves less liquid capital to do all the funky contract stuff that the Eagles do, right? So we're just in a giant game of I don't know right now, and it's kind of crazy how all these, like, macroeconomic problems can actually have an effect on how the Bears build a roster, but that's kind of where we're at right now.
Brett, you've just talked me into and then subsequently out of Trey Hendrickson and also out of a stadium being built anytime soon. Because you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Back to the draft, and I think one thing that Bears fans are hoping for is that someone starts falling in love with quarterbacks named Shedeur Sanders and Jackson Dart, and maybe those players are taken ahead of the Bears, driving down more players and more options for the Bears at number 10. What do you think the chances are either or both of those guys get drafted somewhere in the top nine?
I definitely don't think Dart is going to go top nine. I think Shedeur might. Now, I personally don't have that high of a grade on Shedeur to justify taking him in the top 10, but he's a quarterback, and quarterbacks go high whether their grade is that high or not, right? I think it's possible he goes to New Orleans at nine. And I actually think out of all the teams in the top 10, he actually probably fits them the best as far as the type of offense that I think Kellen's going to run. They have a franchise left tackle. They have a wide receiver one. They're in a dome. So I think him in New Orleans just makes sense. If he gets past New Orleans and he is available at 10, now you could see, you know, potentially you kind of dangle that carrot to like Pittsburgh. And I don't think Pittsburgh would pay a huge price to come up, but you could at least get on the phone and be like, do you want to make sure you get him or not? Because in front of them, like, yeah. You know, there's just a lot of picks between there, right? So, and you know, maybe you call the Rams and say, like, hey, do you want to make sure you get him? I don't think it would be a massive haul because he's not that kind of prospect. But if you really wanted to move down, your best hope is Shedeur ending up at 10.
Great stuff from Brett Coleman, co-host of the Bootleg Podcast on the Midday Show with Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris right there. What is going on here tonight with Mason Graham? Now two draft experts who seem to like Mason Graham, but maybe not as much as everybody else. We had Cynthia Freeland on earlier from the NFL Network, and she thinks that Mason Graham is going to be available to the Bears at 10. She didn't say anything bad about him, but just the fact that she was, oh, yeah, I think he will be there at 10. And just hearing Brett Coleman saying there that he thinks that he might not be there for the Bears at 10, but he's not as high on him as some of the other draft experts. So that's something I'm going to dig into and start to talk to some of my people and see if there's something about Mason Graham. And I know the body type, the supposed lack of athleticism, I don't know if that's starting to catch up with him. That was something that reporters were asking him about at the combine, which I attended in late February. But yeah, that is definitely very interesting. The Trey Hendrickson stuff too. I mean, yeah, he's been tabbed as a potential Bengals trade candidate during the draft. So, oh my God. I mean, who knows? I mean, the mystery of what the Bears are going to do, quite frankly, is awesome because it gives us lots to talk about, lots to think about. Like, we're all learning so much about so many different positions and players because there's so many different ways that Chicago Bears can go. The conversation shall continue at another time. Actually, I'm going to be on the Midday Show. I'm filling in for Layla Rahimi on Monday because Layla's got to go to the dentist. She's going to the dentist. So I'm going to fill in for Layla. I will be with the great Marshall Harris. So I assume that there will be plenty of Bears talk on Monday as well. Thanks to everybody for listening. Really appreciate it. Thank you to Alex Kuhn for producing the show. Cynthia Freeland, who I just mentioned, was on. Bruce Levine, until the whole thing blew up. Bruce Levine was on with us. Tyler Dunn as well. Please check out the Take the North podcast. New episode is going to drop tomorrow with Tyler Dunn. Great stuff about Caleb Williams. Have a great night. Cubs baseball is next on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.